for the second year in a row and the last year as we know major college sports, the University of Connecticut Huskies have won the NCAA basketball tournament. It's been a hell of a college football and basketball season, and this is the last show of the season for sixth-year seniors.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! I'm getting tired of losing to Purdue! I'm not here to round this week! That's why I got a college skip! That's why I was an All-American at Michigan!
It's Division One football! It's the Big 12!
I've got so many ways to make love a million ways. I barely make it enough.
Go play intramurals, brother.
Oh, yeah. I could give a shit about North Carolina right now.
Mikey, how you doing?
All right, was it just me or was it a boring tournament? Let's just go ahead and get it out there.
It was a boring tournament.
The Final Four was underwhelming. The final, which could have been great. We both kind of had a hunch. It was underwhelming.
The women outdrew the men for the first time ever.
Yeah. Which is crazy now. Why are we tipping off at 9:20 Eastern time?
What the hell? We have been tipping off at 9:20 Eastern as if that's a problem for decades.
It is when the final is a snoozer, literally.
Well, okay, you gotta,
like
you
this one is. That's the problem.
Okay, sorry.
If it was
all you East Coast biasers, move west. Move west, young man. I got no problem with a 6:20 tip.
Yeah, whatever. We're not going to It was a shitty final. It was a shitty tournament.
At least the right team won.
Now we got to hear about how UConn's a blue blood now, even though they've missed the tournament 10 times in the last 24 years or whatever it is.
Oh, my God.
Get out of here.
Sports radio did that last year at this time.
I know. It's the same thing.
The answer then was no. The answer is still no.
Yeah. Let's get a little. Here's the shitty thing. Connecticut's won 6 titles in 25 years or whatever it is, and that's amazing. They've been to the Final Four 7 times. This is not how this works.
Recency bias.
This is not how this is supposed to work, though, where you make the final weekend 7 times and you win the whole thing 6 times. You go to NFL, you look at Brady and Belichick and what they did with the Patriots, and they won all those Super Bowls and all this stuff. They still lost in the Final Four, in the conference finals or the Super Bowl, like 7 times. Like, their hit rate was less than 50% when they reached the Final Four. This is not how this is supposed to work. You're not supposed to get to the Final Four 7 times and come out the winner 6 times. Which makes it all the more stupid is that they missed the tournament so often. It's just stupid. This is not how any of this is supposed to work. And UConn, you're supposed to have a little more heartbreak. Here's UConn's heartbreak. Oh my God, Duke beat him at the buzzer in the regional final in 1990. That was 34 years ago, if I'm doing my math right. That was it. They haven't been kicked in the balls in a real, the way it's supposed to be since. It's not like they haven't gotten to the Final Four with a really great team and had one bad shooting night that I can count on. It takes multiple hands to count the times that's happened to Carolina in my lifetime. It hasn't happened to UConn, and they're long overdue for the pain quota to hit in the other direction. So I'm looking forward to that, and it couldn't happen to a nicer coach than the Danny Hurley, who's literally on the court pushing his players, literally touching his players during gameplay, during the national championship game. I don't know why we're not teeing these guys up. And it's not just Hurley. There's a whole bunch of other guys that are on the court. We let these coaches get out of hand. We need to get the game back in the barn here. What are we doing? This is ridiculous.
Well, you kind of went off on about two different tangents.
I did. I'm pissed off. It's all stupid. Basketball's stupid. College sports is stupid. It's all stupid.
The Blue Blood thing is stupid. Because yes. Blue Blood is not about a success rate. It's about heredity. And that's why it will always be Kentucky, UCLA, North Carolina, Duke, maybe Indiana. It's because you're part of basketball's hierarchy. You're part of basketball's kingdom. Nobody else gets in, period. It's not about how well you performed over the last 20 years that suddenly makes you eligible to be a Blue Blood. You are a Blue Blood because of basketball history, and that is never going to change.
Well, no, it will, but it will, it can change. The future can change history. The thing is, it's generational. And you have one generation of UConn here that's done this. That's great. You have to do it for 20 more years and then 20 years after that. That's how this works. That's how Duke was able to enter the Blue Blood conversation in, you know, into the 90s. While Krzyzewski had this, he had a great run of Final Fours there in the late 80s. And early 90s, and then he turned around and did it again in another generation 20 years later. That's how this works. UConn has to maintain some sort of consistency, which they haven't been able to prove consistency, just this weird hit rate. They have to be able to do this again for another generation, and that's, you know, that's part of the threads of the game. Will the game move in that direction? I don't know that it will. Who cares? It doesn't matter. We're not here to talk about the future. We're here to talk about now. Who's now?
Well, I guess, okay, so Connecticut's now. Still, that does not give them entry or the key to the Blue Blood door. It doesn't work that way.
Again, like I said, it's generational. They have to do it for another generation to be invited to the party here.
So let's talk about Monday's game. Connecticut wins 75-60. Their guards, Tristan Newton and Stephen Castle, just destroyed the myth and legend of Zach Edey. It was that simple, right? You drive at Edey, and you react to his action, and you know he can't react to your reaction. That exactly. And Donovan Clingan, a more athletic big man, forced Zach Edey to guard outside the key, which allowed, my God, how many alley-oop dunks did Connecticut have that Zach Edey couldn't reach because he was 15 feet out guarding Donovan Clingan? Because he had to, because Clingan can shoot a three-pointer.
They were cutting to the basket all night. It was just lane after lane. It was basically what we said. The Edey's great. That's funny. Great college basketball player.
Great
fantastic.
College basketball player.
And I'll make this argument. Edey should have been the most outstanding player of the tournament. You could have plug and played the entire UConn starting lineup, I think, and been all right. You take Edey off of Purdue and they're not in the national championship game. They probably don't get out of the first round.
Okay,
that's what it is. He was the single most outstanding player of the tournament. He matched my man Armando Bacot's, you know, six for six double doubles. Again, also in a losing effort. How's that for, storytelling or whatnot? He was the single most. He was the single best player of the tournament. But
okay, no, wait,
that
wait,
was
wait,
not
wait,
enough.
Wait a minute. He was the most valuable player. He was not the most outstanding.
Who was? Tell me who was.
Connecticut. That's what I'm saying.
Most outstanding player was Connecticut.
Without Zach Edey, Purdue would have lost in the first round. Without Zach Edey, Purdue might not have even made the NCAA tournament. Hell, they might have lost in the first round of the NIT if they had decided to go to it. That's how important, how valuable Zach Edey is to Purdue. He's the most valuable player, but he's not the most outstanding.
Yeah, you're get out of here.
Jack Grohlke's probably the most outstanding.
Come on. Edey went for... I told you that he was going to have to go for like 35 and 15 in the final for them to have a shot. And he almost did, and it still wasn't enough.
He scored 37 and had 10 rebounds, but I swear at least 10 of those points were in garbage time when Connecticut didn't care because they were up by 15. 2 points by Zach Edey meant nothing.
Well, this is, and this goes back to what we said last, I think we said this on the air last week, and if not, we definitely talked about it off the air. Edey was the best player on the court, but UConn had 2 through 8, probably.
There you
and
go.
And they needed somebody, Purdue needed somebody to step up and fill the void, and it didn't happen. Smith was effective in short bursts. They got nothing from Lawyer. They needed their guards to step up and play. And that was the problem. That was the puzzle that we all figured they would be unable to solve, is that at the 5 spot, at best, Klingon could maybe play Edey to a draw. And you can argue that it actually happened. The problem was that 1 through 4, it was advantage UConn, and unless somebody went off for Purdue, the numbers didn't add up. UConn said, you know what, Edey, get yours. We'll play one-on-one everywhere else. Good luck finding someone to kick it out to. They limited Purdue's ability not to make threes, to shoot threes. I think they only shot 7 for the game or something like that.
Yeah, they were whatever. 1 for 7.
I believe it was either the fewest attempts or fewest made threes
possibly
in a final
both.
since like the 93 Michigan team or something like that. It was wild. Just how they were able to UConn's defense was able to dictate how Purdue played offense. And it was like, Edey, you're going to have to score 70 to beat us. And obviously that didn't happen.
Well, here's the key stat. Zach Edey had 0 assists.
Yeah.
And that was for 2 reasons. 1, Donovan Klingon could guard him one-on-one. They didn't need to double-team him. Yeah. And when Edey passed it out, there was no double-team. Therefore, there was no open player
exactly.
to shoot threes.
Yep. Yeah. Klingon was the key to the whole thing. And again, I think we called that out. It was like, Edey hasn't played a guy this big who is this versatile with the specific skill set that can deal with him. Yeah, Edey got his, but and that's been Purdue's offense all year. If you throw a double team at him, Edey has been able to find the open man and do things. There was, you know, the man wasn't open, and the man, if he got the ball, couldn't do anything with it. He could not make a play because UConn's guards were too good and too talented. They were just the better team. Oh, on the whole, they were the better team. But Edey was the most outstanding player.
Most valuable, not most outstanding.
Who's more outstanding? Name me
Jack
a player.
Jack Roelke.
Come on. He played. He won one game.
But he was damn outstanding in it, wasn't he?
He did basically get a coach fired, though. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'll give him the runner. I'll give him the second most outstanding. Player. Tristan Newton, 20 points, most outstanding player. Newton's fantastic. But you could have, you had 5 guys that were, you know, sharing the load there for UConn. It's what, UConn's back-to-back champions. Hurley's a clown, but the dude could coach his ass off, though. And here's the frustrating thing. Did you see the video that was going around on social media the last couple of days about Hurley's, his philosophy on recruiting and how he brings certain guys in the program and what he looks for?
No,
it was fantastic. It was riveting on how he's looking for a certain kind of player with a certain kind of background, with certain kind of parents who make these guys coachable. And
Fine, doesn't every coach say that?
It was a different level that he dove into. It was really, really good stuff. And I'm like, where is this guy on the sideline rather than the stalking, raving lunatic that we see for 40 minutes a night? Like I said, there were a dozen times Monday night where he was acting like a 3-year-old who had just been told it was time to go home from Chuck E. Cheese. If the 3-year-old had just done 10 lines of cocaine to go along with the birthday cake.
I'd love to
the
see
man
a
is a psychopath. The man is a psychopath. And the sooner we can get this crap out of the game, the better. They got to reel this shit in.
Well, okay, yes, I agree with you. They should reel that shit in. But until they do, Kim Mulkey, there's others, They know what to do.
It ain't that fucking hard. Right.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If you want to change the culture of the game, you tee them up. But until that happens, you've got coaches who are taking the pressure off their kids by acting like assholes. And it works. And until it doesn't work, they'll keep doing it.
This literally can be fixed in 30 seconds. This is a 30-second solution. This isn't. Oh, we're gonna try to reinforce the charge. The block versus charge and the charge circle and the help defender and all this stuff. This isn't even a 30-second solution. This could literally be done just like that. All you gotta do is do it. It's that simple. It's stupid. Why are we having this discussion? This is so stupid. Congratulations to UConn. I got nothing else to say about the national championship game. This is a fucking stupid.
I agree, but on the other hand, there's not a whole lot to talk about, and the future is so bleak. The UConn-Purdue game might be the best thing going for the next year. I hate to say it.
It's not going to be that bad, but it was a bad title game.
I'm not looking forward to football season, but we'll get to that in a bit. Other tournaments. Congratulations to Seton Hall. And here you go. Big East goes 2-0. They get the NIT. They get the NCAA tournament. Seton Hall beats Indiana State 79-77. About 50 seconds left. Game is tied. Indiana State has the ball. They decide to go 2-for-1. They miss on their first possession. Seton Hall scores. Indiana State had about 12 seconds left. They miss again. Good strategy, bad strategy.
I like the 2-for-1 if you can get it real quick. I didn't see the prior possession. I only saw the final possession. If you got a good set where you get a good shot, I like it. But it doesn't always work. I'd rather have two shots to tie the game or win the game than have one with my season on the line. Simple as that.
And I agree with you. I think the only problem was is they didn't get it off quick enough and or they didn't force Seton Hall to score quick enough because 12 seconds wasn't long enough. Not for college kids. Pros! Oh, that's a lifetime.
Okay, it goes back to coach. Do you have something you can pull out of your back pocket to get a good shot on a 12-second possession?
And they did not.
They kept Avila from getting the ball on the final shot there. So that was good defense by Seton Hall. Avila going to the transfer portal. Larry Blurd's on the market. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is going to get paid. NIL coming.
Him and thousands of other players.
But yeah, that's goes back to a lot of the issues that we've got with college ball. I still don't have an issue with open transfers, but I do think there has to be the whole system is broken. There needs to be some law in the wild wild west, but the horse has long left the barn.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't mind it, but a lot of these kids have an inflated interest in themselves and they end up finding out that they're not as good as they think they are and have no place to go. And that's something we don't hear about is while there's 1,000 kids in the transfer portal and maybe 750 of them find new schools, there's 250 of them twiddling their thumbs going, you mean I gotta go to Mississippi Valley State?
Hey, that's how Mississippi Valley State might be able to win some games next year. They get the transfer portal leftovers. Who knows?
Looking forward to next year, the Fox tournament is going to be a thing.
By the way, I'm not even talking about what you're about to talk about. I love where this is going. I love where this show is going, by the way. How this podcast is breaking right now. This is fantastic. More about the Fox tournament. I want to hear all about it.
Okay, well, apparently they're going to have a postseason tournament next year, starting on March 31, which seems awfully late. Featuring Big Ten, Big 12, and Big East schools that don't make the NCAA tournament, plus others that they'll invite. So apparently what they're going to do is the same thing that the NIT is going to do, which is take at least two teams from those three conferences. Now, I don't know who gets first bid on it, or maybe they'll finish or they'll start after the NIT finishes. I don't know. It's a mess. And the bottom line is, what schools are going to want to do this tournament when they didn't want to do the NIT?
none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
Because it'll be in Vegas. That's about the only thing they have going for them. It'll be in Vegas.
The argument that makes the most sense, and it still doesn't make sense, is that the networks can, you know, Fox in particular, can leverage their brands in their, you know, their Big Ten and Big East and all that stuff. And make this more financially, make sense more on the financial side. But I don't think there's a dollar amount out there that's going to force the teams to think twice about this when they can just shut it down for the season and start working on their rosters for the next season. I think we've already, after the last 2 years, that's how this works, right? If you're not playing for the big trophy, you shut this down if you have any questions on your roster the next year, and you start working on the transfer gimmick. That's how this works, right?
Well, not only
that's that. That's why 19 teams declined the NIT.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's not only that. It's the players. Okay, so let's say, for example, Big 12 school number 9 says, yeah, we'll play in the Fox tournament, and 4 of their 5 starters say, nah, man, I'm entering the transfer portal. I ain't playing.
Now we've got opt-outs. Now we're into the opt-out. Now, thanks, college football. You've brought that over to college basketball and trying to ruin it some more. Fantastic. That's great.
And unlike football, where you got 70, 90 guys, basketball, you might have 15. You lose 3 guys, you've lost a third of your rotation easily.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just going to be an absolute crap show.
Just another example of how we've lost the plot in college sports. We just have. And maybe it was always an illusion anyway, but we've definitely lost it now.
Well, okay, since we're talking about losing the illusion, let's stay with the bad stuff before we get to the good stuff.
We've got good stuff for this show?
We do. So let's get the bad stuff out of the way. We've already got coaching moves.
This kind of is good here. This is fun.
Andy Enfield gets fired by USC. He goes to SMU.
Because obviously you want to leave the Big Ten and go to the ACC. So good call by Andy Enfield. Dunk City coming to Dallas. That's fantastic. And the ACC.
Eric Musselman, seeing the door open at USC, leaves Arkansas.
That's an interesting move, because now you're leaving the SEC to go to the Big Ten. That's a shot over the bow by the Big Ten in the network war here.
And Kentucky essentially shoves John Calipari out the door without really saying they didn't want to spend $33 million to fire him. And Calipari finds the open door at Arkansas.
Okay, I've got some thoughts here. First of all, finish your thought, because I know where you're. We talked about this offline.
Well, I just have a feeling that this wasn't John Calipari finding a new job because he wanted to. This is John Calipari being told by Kentucky, we would like you to leave so that we don't have to publicly embarrass you somehow to force you to leave, but we're not going to fire you because we're not going to pay you $33 million to not work here.
Exactly. That's exactly what that was. It was, and we sort of hinted at this. It's been more than a year now. It's been several seasons where it's like, has Coach Cal actually worn out his welcome with Big Blue Nation? The waters had not been smooth for Calipari and Kentucky the last few years. And getting eliminated in the first round of the NCAA tournament in the manner in which they did by Oakland and Groelke, which was just awesome. It was just basically the final straw. It's like, all right, look, where can you go to just get the hell out of our lives? Just please do. We're not going to hold you up. No, we're not going to interfere. Just find someplace. It's better for your mental health. It's better for our mental health. Let's just, look, we've gone as far as we can. It's time for a divorce. That's basically it. Calipari, Chase, I guess Tyson Chicken has some ties to University of Arkansas. Because there's something with the Tyson Chicken and Sam Walton and the Walmart money. Jerry Jones probably threw a couple of million in here to help cover the buyouts and all this stuff. And, fantastic. That's great. I think this is going to be a 100% unmitigated disaster at Arkansas. This has problems written all over it. And I Coach Cal's going to be great for a couple of years. This is not going to end well at all in Arkansas. I'm just saying right now.
Oh, I totally agree. Although it's going to be must-see television the first time Arkansas goes to Kentucky.
Cal come back to rub. It's going to be a man. That's going to be, yeah, must-see TV, absolutely.
So tell me this. Kentucky is now looking for a head coach. Shall they grab former SMU coach Rob Lanier? Just to close the square?
Yeah, absolutely. We could. No, that's not going to happen. But I do find it interesting that as the world turns the past couple of days, you'd figure that there'd be some names that come up and of interest. And it's all signs show that Dan Hurley's on the national championship press conference after the fact, openly laughing about the idea of leaving UConn to go to Kentucky. So who's the blue blood now, Kentucky? Eat shit, Wildcats. How about that? Nate Oates openly says, took Alabama to the Final Four. Nate Oates comes out and says, no, I'm staying at Alabama. We're going to committed to winning the national championship here at Bama. None of the Scott Drew tweets out today. He's staying at Baylor. Although he didn't come right out and say that. There's a wild conspiracy out there that he actually posted a picture that was 2 years old based on the Family Feud game that was on the television in the corner of the picture. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, great conspiracy out here that Scott Drew posted a fake picture from Waco today that was actually 2 years old, that he was actually going to Lexington to interview for the job. But Scott Drew's...
Are these the same conspiracy theorists that ripped up the Kate Middleton photo as fake?
No, this is SEC football message board conspiracists. These are way more, way deeper in the game than the Kate Middleton conspiracy folks on this. So these are the professionals, Al.
These are conspiracy theorists.
Yes, yeah. This is SEC message board. This is professional conspiracy theorists here. But yeah, I saw the when the tweet came out earlier today about the Family Feud game and it actually airing 2 years ago. Oh, I was just rolling. Yeah, as if they don't air reruns. I'm just saying, it's game shows. They air reruns literally like 80% of the time. Come on, what are we doing here? But yeah, so Kentucky, supposed to big bad blue blood Kentucky can't get anyone to interview for the... Nobody wants the Kentucky job? Oh, the plot thickens in Lexington. I find that fascinating. And we're going to end this season of 60-year seniors with Kentucky on with no head coach. What a cliffhanger.
I still say Rob Lanier. Rob Lanier, baby. Just close the coaching circle.
Well, yeah, I'll make the obvious one here. Bring Patino back.
Oh, no.
That's what needs to happen. Patino versus Calipari at Rupp. That would be hilarious. Again, and the roles are now reversed.
They've been reversed twice. I got one. How about we bring in Kim Mulkey?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, let's do that. Let's bring all the villainry to Lexington, Kentucky. Jesus.
I can't. Yeah, the thing they always say about women coaches is that they aren't strong enough to handle men. Kim Mulkey would make those boys cry.
Which is exactly why it wouldn't work in Kentucky.
I'm going to take off my high-heeled shoe and poke your eye out with it. Now get in there and rebound.
Now does that mean... Whoa, hang on. Does that mean we're in 1996 WCW Monday Nitro era college basketball? Because if that's the case, sign me up. I'm here for it.
Okay, how's this for a transition then? Let's talk women's basketball.
Okay.
Iowa has now competed in the three highest viewed women's college basketball games of all time. Their game against LSU in the Elite Eight grabbed 12.3 million viewers, which was at the time the highest of all time for women's college basketball, and higher than all but one regular season college football game, which was Michigan and Ohio State. Then Iowa and Connecticut in the Final Four does 14.2 million viewers. And then the final does 18.7 million. And by the way, congratulations to the South Carolina Gamecocks. Undefeated season, 38-0.
Yeah, Iowa's gotten all these viewers and whatnot. Let me just call this out. Dawn Staley's a badass.
She is.
Awesome.
Maybe she can coach Kentucky. Amazing.
Yes. So somebody actually threw that at, what job was it? There was a job that opened a few years ago. Somebody said they legitimately need to go after Dawn Staley. Like this was a dead season.
I know the Stockton Kings, the G League team for the Kings, has a female coach, and she is getting interviews for, I believe it's college programs right now.
That's great. No, Dawn Staley's awesome. And how every step of the way, everything, she is amazing. We need more Dawn Staley's and less Kim Mulkey's in college basketball. I'm just saying. That's straight shoot, brother. Dawn Staley's awesome.
Kim Mulkey will rip your kidney out without giving you anesthesia.
That's nice. That's real great. Exactly the kind of leadership we need in such a burgeoning, growing sport here. That's great. We do need villains. Caitlin Clark going number one to the Indiana Fever in the WNBA draft. That's all but official. They announced today that I think the Fever have all but four of their games next season will be nationally televised.
Holy cow.
Yeah, already. The draft hasn't even happened yet. And yeah, it's wild. So yeah. Well, we told you last month on here, the women's game is in great hands right now. I still have a somewhat of a blind spot because I can't wrap my head around these viewership numbers. I'm like, they can't have had more viewers than every game but Michigan, Ohio State this year. That does not add up to it. Just does not compute. But man, that's wild. All the momentum. And it's great for the game. It's great for growing the men's and women's game. It's great for young girls getting into sports all down through grade school. It's awesome. It's absolutely fantastic.
By the way,
was it a moving screen in the semifinal on the final play? Was it an offensive foul UConn threw?
Actually, I didn't see the game.
Oh, no! So you weren't one of the 14 gazillion million people that saw it. It was absolutely... Everybody was saying, oh, we got robbed. It was absolutely a moving screen. Everybody was like, oh, it was a bad call. No, it was absolutely the right call. You can't let that call go and give Beckers the opportunity to take the final get a clear look at the final shot off a clear illegal screen. So it was unfortunate that it wound up that way. It was absolutely the right call.
I watched Iowa and LSU. I wanted to see good guys versus bad guys, although I was rooting for LSU. You know, this is of why course. We're Jim Cornette fans and Midnight Express fans.
Good God.
But I wasn't interested in Iowa, Connecticut, and I wasn't interested in Iowa, South Carolina. I realized that it was, I saw this theory, and it makes a hell of a lot of sense. I wasn't interested in Iowa, LSU. I was interested in Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. If Caitlin goes one and Angel goes two, we have for women's professional basketball the equivalent of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
You're 100% correct on that. 100% correct.
And if anybody's old enough to remember, I'm raising my hand, the NBA was nothing until Bird and Magic joined the league and made it worth watching. The NBA Finals used to be on tape delay on ESPN.
As recently Larry as 1981.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see it. I'd love to see women's basketball get that same push off of Reese and Clark as Johnson and Bird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hell, Caitlin's probably already on first name basis. You say Caitlin to somebody, they probably know who you're talking about.
You're not wrong on that. You're not wrong at all on that. I don't know who has the number two pick of the draft, but Caitlin's going to Indiana. Larry Bird's from Indiana. I mean, there's some, there might be some parallels here. Let's see if the monkeys in the truck can pull this up real fast.
And find out who has the number two pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Well, while you're doing that, let's go back to the numbers for that game. So Iowa and South Carolina did 18.7 million viewers. To give you an idea, that Michigan-Ohio State game did 19.1 million. The Michigan-Washington title game, football game, did 25 million. Going back to basketball, Connecticut and Purdue did 14.82. Nearly 4 million fewer people watched the men's game than the women's game.
Time slot has some, has a part of that, but not all of it for sure.
There's nothing wrong with the time slot. When did Iowa and South Carolina tip?
Oh, it was the NFL 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon tip.
Oh, prime, that's prime. Right. Yeah, it was noon.
Prime, a prime opportunity. Yeah. Let me tell you something. If you don't think it's all a work, if all of this isn't a grand illusion, you're talking about illusion. We're talking about pulling strings in the background. Take one guess who has the number two pick in the WNBA draft this year.
New York or Los Angeles?
The Los Angeles Sparks. So Caitlin Bird goes to Indiana, goes to French Lick, Indiana, and Angel Reese, Magic Reese, Sparks. Look at this shit. We're booking it all the way now. It's all the work, brother.
That is fantastic. Before we move away from women's college basketball entirely, Tara Vandeveer of Stanford retired today. The all-time winningest college basketball coach, men or women, 1,216 wins.
Yeah, eat shit, Krzyzewski. How about that? Yeah, pour one out for Tara Vandeveer. All-time legend. Classy as it gets. And she did it
without putting a stiletto in anybody's eye.
There you go. She says it has nothing to do with Stanford joining the ACC, but you know, says it's just time. It may very well have just been time. It's been a long run for her.
Stanford athletics and Cal athletics are going to suffer so mightily joining the ACC.
They did have a transfer out that directly said, I ain't about to be traveling cross country to play. Now, I don't know. She may have been saying that may have been going to the W. They may have announced going to the draft. Like, wait a minute, you don't think you're going to fly cross country to play in WNBA games? But whatever. It's
but you're
absolutely
getting paid for that.
Absolutely true. Yeah, this whole Stanford to Cal the ACC is a shit show. We need to hurry. Just need to hurry up and reconsolidate this football network driven super league crap, and just move everybody else back to the way it's supposed to be. Like you're saying it's going to happen in 5 years. I'm hoping you're correct. I'm not as optimistic on that front as you, but the sooner I can get my 10-team ACC that plays a double round robin basketball schedule, the happier Mikey will be. Simple as that.
It's going to start with the Big 12 West Conference or division. Once that will prove to be a success, Washington State and Oregon State will join it. USC and UCLA are going to get tired of traveling to Rutgers, and the Pac-12 will be back together.
We'll see about that. There's not enough eyeballs. This goes back to the East Coast bias. There's not enough eyeballs to make the money required to, you know, it all goes back to capitalism.
Well, but with one fewer conference and more power teams in fewer conferences, there's only so many teams that can win. And so you think Texas and Oklahoma are going to be happy when their team goes 7-5, even if it's against SEC teams? No, they're going to want to be 10-2 or 11-1 back in the Big 12.
I'm going to love watching those implosions. It's going to be great. It's going to be stupid, but it's going to be entertaining watching.
Yeah,
Texas
and you can say the same thing. You can say the same thing about, well, let's see, Wisconsin all of a sudden going 6-6 because they're having to face USC and UCLA and Washington and Oregon. At least two or three of them every year. Wisconsin won't be any good anymore. Whatever the Big Ten West or whatever they're going to call it is going to be awful.
Those schools are
never going to sniff a Big Ten title ever again.
I'm glad you brought this up because I'm going to tie this back to Monday night. I saw, and I don't know how much in jest this was. I don't think the initial post was in jest. Somebody said, you know, Purdue spends X, spends X million dollars on basketball every year. It's like $9 million on basketball or whatnot. And UConn spends $24 million. That's what they've got budgeted for basketball every single year. It's like, oh, how are we supposed, how's Purdue, you know, it's just that we got this far and was able to compete this with UConn. It's like, well, wait a minute, Purdue's the team in the Big Ten here getting all this TV money. Why don't they take some of that money? And as somebody, I don't remember who, I think it was a UConn fan, said, why don't you take that big, all that big, the Big Ten Fox money and pimp it out to your other school, other sports? What are we doing here? And I said, wait a minute, let's back this up a little bit. Poor UConn. And we come out here every fall and we rip on UConn football. They have been a punching bag for us for the last 12 years. Let's just be straight up about it. If you go back and let's look at this, let's really break this down. What has Purdue football, with all the Big Ten money to make, what has Purdue football done that has been any better than what UConn football has done since the turn of the century, since Drew Brees left UConn?
Yeah,
what has
much.
Purdue, if you go back and look, and I didn't do the math on like wins by seasons and whatnot, but the Randy Edsall era at UConn produced far more success than anything that Purdue football has done in the last 24 years. So I don't want to hear, what are we doing? We have got schools that are riding on the coattails of Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia and to a lesser extent Florida to make these big TV deals. And it's not just, let me tell you, it ain't just the Vanderbilts and the Northwesterns and the Rutgers of the world, y'all. We're talking the Purdues, the Illinois, the Iowas,
Wisconsin, Indiana, yeah. Northwestern, pretty much anybody
State,
except
Missouri,
Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State.
Yeah, it's just, we're making all this money because the big schools in these two leagues are driving this stuff. And at some point, those big schools are going to say, why are we carrying these freeloaders? Why are we sharing the pie with these freeloaders? And it's just going to keep breaking down. And I think that's the tipping point. Whenever they finally say, hey, why Alabama's going to say, why are we carrying the water here for Vanderbilt? Why are we carrying the water for Missouri? At some point, they're going to want theirs, and this whole thing's just going to come completely undone. It can't happen soon enough.
I've said it before. Eventually, you're going to have about 12 teams that are going to be playing essentially semi-professional football under the guise of these university names.
Yeah,
and then we're
going to
have the rest of the schools still playing college football.
Yeah, and if there was a story that broke last week about the, you know, there's powers that be actually looking at some of that, and they threw out the idea of 70 schools doing this. Like, no freaking way it's going to be 70 schools.
No, not a chance.
I think it's 30 at most, and I actually don't think it'll wind up being that many.
Nah, I think it might be 16 at most.
What a,
because you need two conferences. And so you need at least 8 teams in each conference, and that gives you 16. And you can have first and second place play each other, and there's your playoff, and there's your championship game. But you need at least 16. And the other 117 can play college football again.
Okay.
I'm so not looking forward to September. I mean, you may get grumpy old man Allen the entire college football season. I'm not sure how I'm going to enjoy it because it's going to be a shit show.
I'm pulling a Dean Smith. You know what? I don't know. I'll let you know in August if we're gonna do fuck this. Maybe we don't even do this anymore. I don't know. Dean Smith was like, yeah, I'm gonna go play some golf. I'll tell you in July if I'm up to this. And he rolled up and said, he woke up one morning in October and said, you know what, Dick, I'm good. Let's call it.
The Michigan State football coach pulled that too a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm
quit in like August.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Maybe we'll do the same thing. What else we got?
That's it, man. Let's leave it on that high note right there.
Yeah,
we might be back next year.
Might. Yeah, that's a shoot. I'm not laughing. That's a shoot, brother. We might not.
We might do two preview shows and go, yeah, this is what you got. Have fun. We're out.
That might be it.
Now, we got to stick around for year two of Deion Sanders. That might be worth it just in itself.
Coach Prime, they're going to have to give me more than Coach Prime to keep me going on this. I'll get paid enough for this shit.
See if he loses more games, 57-14.
But he's coming, though. He's coming. Yeah, that's fine. Put the sunglasses.
See if his son, how long it'll take his son to get another concussion.
Come on.
I say game three.
I've got nothing else for the listening audience. I do have a good sign off, though, because we did it. We made the whole damn show. This was fantastic. I'll tell you why in a second.
Okay, well, fire away, man.
Oh, man, this is fantastic. For DJ Burns, for DJ Horn, Ben Middlebrooks, Kevin Keats, and all those NC State guys that we didn't even mention play in the Final Four, because who cares about NC State and their bogus Cinderella run? For all those jabronis, that's the best producer in the business, Alan Capps. I'm Mikey Watson. We will be back, maybe, if we feel like it, in 4 or 5 months. I can't do the math, and I don't want to do the math right now because the tournament sucked. College football is going to suck next year. The podcast, if we come back, won't suck. We'll do it all again, maybe, right here on 6 Year Seniors. You just listened to the last episode ever. Maybe.
Maybe.